We're now recording.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's JAS call on Tuesday, the 12th of July. We have Dev Anantuliksingh, Rafik Damak, Carlton Samuels, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Tijani Benjema, Alex Gakuru, Carlos Aguirre, Eric Brunner-Williams, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Avery Doria, Evan Leibovich. From staff, we have Carla Valente, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies today noted from Michaela Nalon, Boudouin Chombe, and Tony Harris. If I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Rafik.
Thank you, Gisela. Thank you, everybody, for joining today's call. First, please, if you have any update in your SY or DRI, please do so. I'll send after to that to Glenn. So, for the agenda, we will have the same items like the last two calls. And then we can start with the first item, which will be led by Avery. So, Avery, do you have any updates? And so let's discuss about the foundation funding, etc. Avery, it's up to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Rafik. As before, there's no new documents. There's still the two contributions in there, the funds and foundation contribution, and the fee reduction and program self-funding requirements that I put in. We discussed a bit of the funds. An email from Eric after that meeting, I think, sort of going over some of the points he had made in the meeting. I've made a couple changes based on the two comments and things that were said in the meeting. One is on the first two bullets that Alan had commented on, saying that it basically wasn't the job of this board set up funds and foundations committee to investigate legal structures. The text is bracketed, but I've changed the bracketed text to say work with ICANN staff to investigate and understand. As I say, this has still been one of the major stumbling blocks that's always brought up whenever someone talks about the fund and foundation. Oh, but we don't know. So I believe that this committee still needs to be the driving, forcing function that has the responsibility to make sure that the staff does it. But, of course, that's up to you all. So the text remains bracketed with a note saying move to footnote was suggested. I don't think the wiki's got footnotes. It kind of does, but they don't work real good. The other change I made was under availability of funds, I put in new text in there that hopefully meets what Eric was talking about. That text now reads, and it probably has my typos, so I'm sure someone can point those out to me quite, well. The goal of the program in terms of providing funds is both immediate and ongoing. There is an immediate need to obtain funds sufficient to help a significant number of applicants from developing economies to participate in the application process of the first round in 2012. There is an intermediate goal to assist JAS-selected applicants in setting their registries in 2013, and there's a long-term goal of ensuring that the second and further rounds will have a stable source of funding available for assisting applicants from developing economies. So I'm not sure that that's exactly what Eric was pointing me to, but I have replaced the errant paragraph from before. That's all I've done. I see Tijani doesn't hear me. I'm practically shouting. I'm talking into the microphone. I'm really sorry. I'm done.
Thank you, Avery. For some reason, I cannot access to other booking, so I am not sure who is in the queue.
Nobody's on the queue so far, Rafik. If there are no hands up, I'm looking at the Connect, Adobe Connect.
Are you saying that it's my line that's making that noise?
It is your line. It's static. Are you using a mobile phone?
Nope. I'm using a landline.
Okay, well, I've asked the operator to see if we can adjust.
Okay, but I just unplugged a couple other things from the circuit, and it seems to have stopped.
Okay, yes, it has. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comment? Okay,
I see Cheryl has marked a question while we're waiting for hands. Can we use the term needy applicants? Of course, whatever term, but I've tried to use the Jazz qualified term as opposed to needy, because the qualifications seem to be more than just needy. But certainly,
Yeah.
And I thought we were always doing developing economies.
So it's clear that we need to agree about the same terms that we will use in the whole in the whole report, for just to be consistent. So I'm not sure. Is Cheryl want to speak, or because still I cannot access to Adobe? I don't know why.
You don't have any hands up.
No, there are no hands up. I think.
Okay.
Okay, well, I guess then, I'll keep looking for questions. I mean, Cheryl's also just brought up an issue about, are we just restricting to developing economies? I guess that's a question. I thought we were, but perhaps I misunderstood. As I say, I'll be leaving in 20 minutes. I have another work-based call at the half hour.
We see that. I've seen that area.
But anyhow,
Alan has his hand up.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, with regard to the question Cheryl asked, I think it's best in the body of our document if we just use the term, as Eric used, some shorthand which will not be misunderstood, of Jazz qualified or something like that, and then we define it. If we end up with the final definition of including some categories of applicants and GTLDs which could not be called developing economies, we shouldn't have to go back and rewrite the rest of the document. So I think we should use a neutral term throughout the document, and where we define how one gets qualified, whatever falls out of it, falls out of it.
This is Aubrey. If I can respond, of course, I'll make that change, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
If there's no other comments, let's move ahead. And if we have nothing to talk about, we can get off the call early.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good idea for me. Anyway, so if really we don't have any further comment, I guess.
I suspect there may still be further comments, but, you know, there's nothing, obviously no one on the call who has anything to say right now.
What do you want to say?
Please don't be shy, and please don't wait for the next call. I check the comments. I try to check, like, every day just to see if there's new ones to deal with. I apologize that I only got around to making the edits this morning, but, you know, I am checking it daily. So, you know, comments anytime, please.
I think we're all time constrained right now. At least I am, anyway.
Hi, all. This is Evan. I'm just now catching up. It's going to take me a little while to come to speed, but I'll definitely not be shy with any input. But I apologize. Over the last 2 weeks, I've been pretty well out of touch with anything jazz-related, and I'll definitely be in touch with you as I go through stuff.
Okay. And I see Eric's note. I'm not up for, you know, signing up to do all kinds of PowerPoint and presentation wear for these meetings. I don't control Adobe. I think it's dumb that we use a system like Adobe that doesn't interface with the wiki we use. But that you have to switch back and forth between two screens. I've got two screens set up, so I don't have to switch back and forth. But, you know, I'm not going to do extra work just to have presentation wear. And I see Eric has his hand up.
Eric has his hand up. Rafik.
Okay. Yeah. So, Eric, please go ahead.
Thank you, Rafik. Eric Leonard-Williams for the transcript. The suggestion I made in the chat is actually directed at the staff, who could be picking up the text from the Adobe and putting it onto the Confluence, picking up the text from the HTML source in the workspace that we have for doing authoring and putting it in the workspace that we have for doing communication with each other. So from one URL to another URL, not the presenter, but actually have staff mouse up the whatever the current work is and put it in the window rather than having that window be dead area consisting of nothing more than a resolution that's been out since February or November or anyway, a board resolution that we're all fairly familiar with. The reason I raised my hand has now even slipped my mind. So thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
Okay. Thank you, Eric. I'm not sure. Maybe Gisela or Carla can answer your comment.
Hi, Rafik. If you and Carl tone one, I can start switching text. It always takes time with formatting, even a copy and paste from Wiki. But I'm happy to do that if you want to. And the board text is not there since February. This is the board text from September Singapore resolution with some of the things that are some of the important deadlines to consider because this is one of the things that always comes up during the meeting. So whatever the chairs want, I'm happy to do.
Avery has her hand up, Rafik.
Quick thing.
Yeah.
Instead of having to PDF it and put it up, I noticed that for those that are hosts, you could share a screen. So would you be able to share a Confluence within a screen? Just something to check out so it would save work on having to do that. I'm just curious. But anyhow, thanks. I guess I'm done.
Okay. So, maybe we can try next time as Avery suggested maybe to use PDF. But I'm not sure if if people can, scroll down the document. So, it's not just that only the host can do that. So,
I had asked Carla to put up the date the important dates to consider to keep them front and center. Because I thought it is important to keep those top of mind, I still am of that view. But, of course, if folks decide that they don't need to know that information and keep it in front of them, that's okay. It can be removed. To the extent that we need to see the text, we have always asked, and the staff has always been helpful in putting text when we ask. So I'm not at all opposed to the staff doing the same thing that they're used to doing. Many times I've had asked for them to put in their Dope Connect, and it has happened. So I'm not at all opposed to it.
Okay. Thank you, Carlton. Okay. So we will try next time and the next call those option and to see if it works or not. But now seeing not further comments, maybe I can move to the next item. Just I want to say that maybe to move forward, I think that as co-chairs we need to send a remind maybe to the mailing list, ask people did you say something funny? I'm not sure. To send a remind to the mailing list, asking people to check the week about this part, to put comments, and then we need to do that, etc. Just to reach the consensus and to avoid that, to have to do that later at the end when if people have comments or objections. So it's better to ask people to do that now. And so, okay. So moving to the next item, hopefully now this time we have Elaine in the call. So she can give us an update the in-kind service. I hope that Elaine could check the last two calls and to see the comments that we had. Elaine, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, please, you have the lead for this item, and so please go ahead.
All right, thank you. I did have a look at the transcript from the meeting that I missed on Friday, and so I want to address a couple of the points that were raised on that call. And then move forward with the items from the email I had sent, well, initially back in February and then again in June that haven't been dealt with yet. So the first thing I want to talk about is, I believe it was Cheryl who said she raised a concern that the $2 million funds wouldn't be used by ITAN or applicants to pay registry service providers for their services. Having that $2 million be announced just in the last couple of weeks, I'd like to point out that the NPS service idea or concept has been sort of a shorter for over a year.
Elaine, you're fading badly.
Right. The proposal for in-kind services is part of the working group charter since we first formed. And it's not, this concept is not a play for registry service providers to get a grab at the $2 million fund that was just set up a couple weeks ago. So I want to put that out there because I feel like the concept was registry service providers or consultants or accountants or attorneys that will need to help applicants through this process shouldn't be treated as something as a hostile attempt from registry service providers to take something away from the applicants, where, you know, I'm coming at this from the position of it's actually a loss to my company to be participating in the group and the lost revenues. So,
Alan has raised his hand. I suspect he wants to say something about the loss of audio.
No, I was actually going to respond to substance. Everyone else is commenting on the inability to hear Elaine clearly. I was going to comment that my taking of Cheryl's comment was not saying that the motivation of registry service providers is to provide the money so they can capitalize on it, but in structuring the final details, we should try to make sure that there are no that it's not easily gamed. So I didn't attribute it as motive, but a caution as we're working out the details.
Right, I fully agree with that. We've tried to work on all aspects of this to prevent gaming, so that's clear. But I just want to make sure that, you know, it's part of the common thinking that the in-kind services has been around for a long time and we just haven't gotten around to working on it.
I don't think there was any assumption of ill will or malfeasance in presenting it.
Okay. The second point is that the website development that was discussed, that has also been in the works, I think, since the Trion-Time resolution, and that was September of 2010. And there was money set aside by the board for administrative tasks to help develop that, which I think Carla also verified on the call last week. And then another...
Gone completely.
No, she's gone completely.
Okay.
Okay.
She's back, Elaine?
No, not yet.
Okay. Yeah, let's wait. I don't think that we'll have comments now. I don't see anybody in the queue, but let's wait until then.
on the chat, Rafiq, if you look at the transcript, someone has raised the issue whether or not we should continue to call it in-kind services. Maybe Lynn would need to answer that. I think she's answered a bit, but you might want to raise that as a specific response.
Carlton, this is Evan.
Yes.
I don't have access to Adobe. Can I talk?
Yes.
Hi.
Let me ask Rafiq.
I mentioned it myself. I would join one of those that has a question about the use of the term in-kind. In-kind is usually meant as a service offered equivalent to some kind of cash contribution, and since we're not setting any particular standard of cash contribution, I don't even know why this is relevant here. Yes, it is useful to us to have a clearinghouse for corporate services offered, but in-kind to what is an issue. We're not saying that you know, there's a certain standard of contribution for anything, and if that's the case, then the use of the term in-kind is absolutely inappropriate here. So by all means, it is within our mandate and within our charter to investigate how to facilitate the matching of donors of corporate services together with those who need it, but it is not anywhere near in my mind what I think of when I've come to think of in-kind contributions, which have normally been seen as a substitute to financial contributions. Since we're not making any demands of corporate financial contributions, I don't see how it's relevant. If it was a matter of, you know, that a company could donate services to the $2 million pool, that to me is not useful. The foundation fund itself has to deal with cash, and I don't see where services can be provided as an alternative to the cash that recipients are going to need. So while I was not the one who initiated the problem with the term in-kind, I'll certainly speak in favor of my own difficulty with the term.
Okay, thank you, Ivan. So, understanding your comment, but what do you suggest instead of using in kind?
Can we suggest another term?
Sorry, Ari?
I'd like to speak to the issue before we decide on another term, because one person is uncomfortable with the term.
Yes,
everyone can speak.
I totally disagree. This is Avery. In-kind services is a term of reference for people who provide services instead of money. We're not talking about in-kind as a contribution to the fund or foundation. We're talking about it being a totally separate thing. So I think, I mean, by all means, find another word if that word is uncomfortable. But it means what it says is that people are donating services.
Then why don't we call it donated services?
Whatever. Okay, fine. It's a normal way of referring to things. And as I say, my main concern, though, is any linkage between the in-kind or service donation and the fund foundation, because I don't know if it was Cheryl that mentioned it, but I know I'm certainly concerned about in-kind services such as discounts being used as a lead-in to getting funds. And at that point, I'm signing off. I'll listen to the rest of the recording. Bye.
Elaine's back on the call. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We have three people in the queue. So Elaine is back to the call, I think. Okay.
Can you see now, Rafiq?
Yeah, we have okay. Andrew, then Anand, and then Eric. Andrew, please go ahead.
Great. Thanks very much. I think I understand Evan's discomfort with the term in-kind services, and I think it was fine as a useful marker for the time we had to this point. But I think at this point it probably is worth looking at another term that will give us a little bit more precision. In a sense, we have to determine what we've got on the table. Is it a donated service? If it's a completely donated service, it falls into one category in my mind. If it's a discounted service, it might be slightly different. It may just be this matching thing that we've been talking about, in which case it may not be a discounted service at all, but just linking up the right people with other right people who need them. That could be a very valuable and vital function for some sort of a clearinghouse that wouldn't be anything donated at all. The fact is that all of these services are services that have some sort of economic value. Maybe the better function would be to focus on what those services are, as opposed to I guess my point being is that everything translates on some level into a contribution that is either paid for or donated, and so it seems to be a little bit of an arbitrary distinction, although I understand where it came from. I don't myself have the ideal term, but I do understand why it would be confusing. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. So, Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I just think we need to be careful not to get too engrossed in the nomenclature discussions. I mean, in-kind has a variety of different meanings in different venues. Sometimes it means instead of money, but treated equivalent to money, you know, in tax deductions, perhaps. And in other cases, it's going to have a completely different form. It certainly, in our mind, at least I think we're talking about, would not be counted against, you know, as if it was a contribution to the dollar fund. But I think we got to be really careful. You know, if a registry says, I'll offer free service for 5 years, is that an equivalent of a discount because they're hoping to get the business 5 years from now? Maybe. I think we need to not worry too much about the nomenclature right now and get the concepts down. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Rafiq? Go ahead.
Thank you, Rafiq. In the chat, I put my comments this week in the chat. In response to Evan, I point out that some resources other than cash are fungible and can be resource accumulated by and allocated by an agency other than the provider and the consumer pair. So that's really all I had to say. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. Okay. So, Eric, do you still want your comment? Or okay. So, I think now we can back to Ellen. Ellen, can you hear me?
Yes, sorry I dropped off. Can you tell me what I was saying when I dropped off? Because I don't know when I was lost.
You were responding to the emails and the transcript and some of the questions that were raised relative to your area of specialty in the transcript. And then you said you were going to go on and deal with some of the substantive questions that you asked in February and June that still have not been answered by anyone.
Yeah, okay. That was quite a while. Sorry.
Elaine?
Okay, so what's left to do then is, first I'd just like to make sure that the working group believes that this website concept is something that's useful for us to pursue. And it's something that, you know, the board has allocated an administrative fund to help with. Staff's already been working on it. And so the base of it, hello?
Yeah.
Sorry. So the base of it's in place. And I talked to Kurt Pritz in Singapore, and he said they're waiting for some providers to step forward and say, you know, that they have services they want to provide before they launch the website so it gets some traction. In response to that, I wanted to point out that last year there was a public comment submitted by Black Knight and also by Newstar saying that they were willing to provide support to needy applicants in some method or another. I remember Newstar saying they'd like to provide some cash to a fund, and I think Black Knight said they were willing to provide some sort of other services. So the problem we have there, or the thing that needs to be resolved, is getting this information out to providers, explaining our program, and requesting that they notify staff of their willingness to provide support. And the other end of that is letting the applicants know that this is available to them and getting them involved too. So if anybody has any ideas on how to deal with that, that's one thing I'd like our working group to consider. And the second part is actually coordinating that assistance. So we need to figure out if we want to be involved in any of the process type questions about how do these applicants actually get matched, unless we just stick with the initial idea, which I think had a lot of acceptance from the board a long time ago, that it's simply a list and it's a place for people to go and see, oh, here's Black Knight, they're willing to help me set up my IPv6 DNS servers. And then they just call Black Knight up directly and there isn't any sort of intervention from anyone. So if we could talk about people's ideas around that, How are these things coordinated? I think that would be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Ellen. Any comments? Andrew, please go ahead.
Thanks. Elaine, I think what your points are good points. I am obviously administratively the easiest thing to do would be to set up a billboard and to say without recommendation or prejudice, here are people who are interested in providing service. The question for me is whether or two things. Number one is I think a kind of a backhanded benefit of this program, if we do it correctly, would be to encourage capacity in some of these regions of the world that we're hoping to support. So I'm wondering whether we will provide more arrows that point back to the Global North and its consulting and companies and things like that. I don't know. I'm just brainstorming on this. And the other thing is that so that's on the one hand. On the other hand, I think that if we get to the point where we're trying to make recommendations, then all of a sudden whoever is doing the recommending becomes an interested party, and that may become difficult. So I can see it from both directions. I don't know whether there is a way that we can get people who really have specialization in working with underserved markets to them without doing recommending. I'd love to get people's thoughts on that.
Thank you, Andrew. Eric?
Thank you, Rafiq. Elaine, the comment I previously made to Evan, I'm going to tediously repeat. Some of the things that may be offered by third parties may be useful to more than one applicant or maybe fungible like cash in the sense that, to take a problematic example, but just one that we just happen to know about, there is the offer of some kind of assistance with providing a responses to the technical questions that recently came across our notice. And that's something that can be matched to more than one applicant. And then there are things which are like specific services, specific registry hosting offers, which are specific to a particular offer or that may be used by one or more applicants. So the task of creating some form of a vehicle for association, which I think is part of the what we are attempting to do and what your subgroup is attempting to do, and distinguish between those things which are point-to-point and those things which are multicast. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Elaine?
Thank you. I want to respond to the point that there's concern that Northern or North American companies would dominate the field when it comes to launching these new registries. My thought there, having worked with COCA, which is a cooperative of CCTLD operators, I've seen different ways for this to be managed. And ultimately, what a registry operator needs is knowledge. And that knowledge can only come from trial and error or from being taught by someone who already knows these things. If we're concerned about all of the work coming out of the northern countries, I think we could try to figure out a way to work CCTLD operators into the picture. Maybe they could become mentors or you can lead on some of these things. You don't really know how to avoid the idea that the knowledge and the infrastructure is in certain geographical regions. And in order for that to spread somewhere else, those other regions need sort of a leg up. Isn't that what we're doing with this program? So I hear the concern, but I really don't think that that should be a reason to block people from participating. One, as far as Eric's concern or point that there are different kinds of services, that's clear. So maybe what we need to do is, you know, right now this particular subgroup is focused on this matching idea. Maybe we should also add another function as communication sharing. So maybe part of this website not only could be showing applicants which registry service providers or which consultants are willing to do what sort of services, but also say, well, here's a link out to a wiki where you can get, you know, templates of these particular questions answered. You know, we can make it more than one utility. Those are my responses to those points. Thanks.
Thank you, Lynn. Okay. Any further comments?
Yes, Rafiq, this is Eric.
Yeah, Eric. Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you. I've just placed my comment in the chat for those who are not on. I'll read it. An area I'm interested in is licensing terms and conditions as a possible form of resource to be made available. At present, I believe the .cz registry software is unencumbered and therefore available to any applicant, including those that are JAWS qualified. If this list can be grown beyond one, the request needs to be conveyed to the potentially interested current license holders, such as known and prospective RSPs, and then that answer, or the answers, if any, conveyed to the JAS qualified applicants. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Okay.
Can I respond to that?
Yes, Helen.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thanks. Okay. So I'd like to explore the licensing terms and conditions. And Eric, can you tell me, do you mean that particular provider has been vetted by ICANN as trustworthy, or what licensing or permissions or conditions beyond entering into a contract with ICANN do you think would be useful or necessary?
You're waiting for Eric to respond, Elaine?
Yeah, or anybody. You know, if licensing and terms of conditions are of interest to the group, can you explore that further or tell me some more about your ideas here? How do we go down that path?
Well, my interpretation of it is Eric is saying, well, you require software to run and support registry operations. If software is available almost as this free and open source kind of environment, I think that's what it means. But Eric is on, so he could explain further.
If I may, Carlton, that's precisely what I meant. There's really just the issue of encumberment of instances of EPP server and the underlying or the associated registry business logic usually implemented in software to be addressed. And it really is just a disassociating the licensing from the individual RSPs. That's all. Thank you.
Did you hear that, Elaine?
Yeah, but I guess what I want to know is, so you want to make sure that the provider is qualified and trustworthy. So are you talking about vetting them?
No, Elaine, I have no interest in the provider's trustworthiness, loyalty, and any other Boy Scout attributes. Only in the the licensing conditions of the software that which they have, which putatively is EPP conformant for EPP 1.0, let us say, or some other instance, some other version of EPP. So,
okay, so you're talking about what sort of conditions they are putting on the applicant. Okay, that makes sense. So how do you see that fitting into the work that we're doing?
Let us assume that in it. Go ahead, Carl.
Yes, Eric?
Or Rafiq, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So because we have Alan in the queue, but if you want those documents, you can. So Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit lost in this discussion between two professionals who are perhaps talking above our heads, or at least above mine. I thought one of the questions, and not necessarily the whole question that Elaine was asking, was if this is software provided by this particular registry, provided free, who is going to take responsibility for ensuring that it's compliant with the requirements in the applicant guidebook? I'm not saying it isn't. The question is, who's going to take responsibility for that if it is to be made available to these to all applicants, whether they're needy or not? I think that was one of the questions that Elaine asked, and I haven't heard an answer to that.
I think Elaine wants to respond to that. Elaine?
Yeah, that is a question that's been, I think, presented by part of the group, and you know what my personal response to that is, nobody really knows what they're going to get when they hire a provider. There's no certification for Michael Pelage that he can do these sorts of things when he writes response to the application questions and posts them on a wiki. What I want to know is how much interest is there in the group that we pursue the vetting process for any providers that come forward and say they're willing to volunteer whatever services? Is this something we need to keep considering, or do we just take my personal position, which is buyer beware, basically? Yes.
Thank you, Ellen. Carlton?
This is Carlton Sanders for the record. This is a personal thing, that if the software is fit for purpose, and I'm presuming that it would be fit for purpose because either somebody is certifying it as fit for purpose, or we have use examples of it, then it becomes a part of the set of services that could be supplied. I see that. So you have the software, it's being donated, and it's being certified as providing the services that are required to a certain standard, and there are ways to do that in the software world. And then you still put a label on it and say, well, while it is certified, buyer beware. I think that's perfectly okay.
Okay.
Are there any other thoughts from people on this call about getting providers before they make it onto any sort of list? I might mention that's multiple providers who have to go through a very stringent pre-delegation testing.
Yeah, Anand, just go ahead.
I don't think ICANN can be in the business of doing the testing for a provider. If someone offers a service, it's going to have to be offered with clarity as to whether this is already pre-certified and, you know, everyone can attest to it, or it's something that the recipient is going to have to take responsibility for. You know, there's a big difference between someone providing registry in a box software that ICANN has already put a stamp of approval on, and one that it says take it, but you're going to have to be able to demonstrate to ICANN that it meets the services. I don't think either of them is tainted, but I think when an offer is made through this, you know, bulletin board, whatever, that there's got to be some clarity in it. I don't think we can specify that you cannot offer it unless it's certified. You know, as you point out, you know, Michael Pelage may not be certifiable, excuse the expression, in the context, but someone may want to take him up on his services. I think, you know, one simply needs to declare what the issues are and leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. I have a question. So we have this discussion about software, etc. So my question is, there is some, I'm not sure how to say this, some software which is really usually used by many registries. I guess in the CCTLD registries it's more, there is no common practice or common software, etc., or common standard. But is there software who are used by all those registries? So, and then de facto we can say that it's compliant to the requirement as set up by ICANN. Maybe Eric can reply to my question. Eric?
Yeah, no one actually runs a registry according to the current requirements in the applicant guidebook. As far as I'm aware, I think, you know, a lot of developers have built out to those specifications, but no one's running a completely searchable list function the way they've defined. So it's not already in place. A lot of these requirements are brand new, and they far, far exceed anything that's used for generic top-level domains at this time.
So you mean that usually many registries have in-house software, so and then now maybe with the new requirement they need to improve that or to make some patches. Okay, thank you. Eric?
Thank you, Rafi. As Elaine just pointed out, the requirements currently in the current guidebook are actually much higher than the requirements that VeriSign has to implement to operate.com. The rationality of that I leave to others. I think it's insane. But nevertheless, the question I want to ask, or I suggest asking, to the current members of the registry stakeholder group and also to the current members of the registrar stakeholders group, but the question actually can be addressed to the larger population of ICANN practice following, and I want to put quotation marks around the word following, registry operators, whether they're CCTLD operators or GTLD operators. And that is your software, what are the terms and conditions for the licensing of your software to JAS qualified applicants? I expect some answers. The range of answers will be from, it's free, take it, for instance, from the .cz registry operator, to just to pretend that VeriSign is evil, to it's only available for cash and it's only operated out of someplace in Virginia as a possible response from VeriSign. So within this spectrum of possible answers, some of the possible answers may be useful to the JAS qualified applicants, both for the registry function and also for the registrar function, just to go that particular spot momentarily. So that was the point of my question, Elaine, is can we acquire this knowledge through your work, through your subgroups outreach to the current registry operators that we know exist or that we think exist? And I'll stop there. Thank you.
I have a response to that. I think that's a brilliant idea. I think it's really good to know, you know, you want to flip the box over and look at the back of it and see what the warnings are, you know, warnings for use. I think that's a really good idea. And that's very possible up to a point, right, because a lot of times in a contract there are some things that are specific to a certain customer or an applicant that wouldn't be for another customer or applicant, you know, the length of term of the contract or the service level agreements. Those are some things that are going to be particular to each individual customer, but yeah, as far as licensing and, you know, basic information that companies are normally willing to make public, I think that's a really good thing to include on our list if we develop one.
I'll recognize myself since I'm actually responding to you. Elaine, what I'm referring to is not the warnings or flipping the box over, but rather whether the software is available and under what conditions. So, for instance, the FRED implementation from the .cz operator is available under a Creative Commons license. What other registry implementations are similarly unencumbered? At one point in time, a registry platform was available from a group of small island countries, which you may be aware of. It's possible that some other instances of registry platforms are being considered by their current license holders for reducing the restrictions on licensing and making them available as public, as open source projects. That's the question I'm attempting to ask. Thank you.
Okay, so Eric, are you asking that we should find these people, specifically the open source people, or what I'm suggesting is that anybody who comes forward would put their terms publicly. I guess maybe we're missing each other here, I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're talking at cross purposes. I think both questions are interesting and valid. That is, my question, is the software available with unencumbered? And your question, what is the total package of terms and conditions that go with the offer by any registry service provider? Thanks.
Okay. I have my hand up. This is Evan.
Yes, Evan, please go ahead.
I'm listening to this exchange, and I think you're both right, Elaine and Eric. Essentially, I don't think we have much more of a role to play here than putting up a directory of services available. And I think one of the things that we should be able to list as part of the directory is, you know, is the software being supplied as part of the offered services open source? Is it proprietary? I don't know if we have to go into the level of detail in a directory listing for the detailed legal things about the terms and conditions, but at least there are certain things that we can make clear to applicants that, you know, if you are JAS qualified, here are a number of companies that are offering services, here are the services, here are the licensing terms on a general level to the software being provided, maybe a couple of other things, and I don't know if we really need to do a whole lot more than that. We're providing a matchmaking service. We're not signing the legal agreements between applicants and providers.
Thank you, Evan. Any further comment? Okay, hearing none. So I hope that all we can put all these comments that adding this item in the wiki so we can shape that later. Okay. Is there any other business? Okay, hearing none, I think we can adjourn this call for today. Thank you, everybody, for joining. And I would ask you, Eric.
Yeah, as a suggestion, Chair, before the close of any particular meeting, starting with this one, calling for items for the agenda for the next meeting might be helpful. I'd like to put an item on the agenda for some subsequent call. I don't know that it necessarily has to be the next call, but for some subsequent call. So just asking for agenda suggestions might be useful. Thank you.
Okay. So you have any suggestion for agenda item?
Yes, I have two. One is the RSP question, and the other one is the registrar question. And I should be finished with the writing of the proposed draft text by Wednesday and make it available to the group Wednesday for discussion on Friday or some subsequent call.
Okay. Eric, can you send those suggestions to the mailing list and adding the document when your proposal when it's ready?
Yeah.
Please do so. Thank you. Is there any further comment? So, as Eric said, if you want to add or to suggest any agenda item, please do so. And hopefully, okay, there is an echo. Having known, I think we can adjourn this call for today, and I want to say that please check the wiki, put your comments, and then yes, we can have some substantive text to discuss during the call. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. See you in Friday.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye. Take care.